Hello, everybody. It's Michael Millerman here. I wanted to go over something with you today, which is this. Elon Musk posting some photos of when NVIDIA delivered their first AI system to OpenAI. So there are a lot of things about this that are interesting. The first is, you know, Musk's purchase of Twitter, X, as XAI, Grok, and all of that is a huge deal right now, especially if you've been following how badly the Google Gemini image AI is performing. And, you know, NVIDIA is just smashing all of the stock bars. Okay, so here, you know, everyone was waiting for its earnings report just a few days ago, and it performed pretty well and jumped quite high. So NVIDIA is in the news for powering the AI revolution, and Musk, you know, is in the news all the time. And he posted this a few days ago, about a week ago now, actually. Okay, of Jensen delivering the first AI system to OpenAI when he still worked there. And I noticed, as did some other people, this little block of writing in the back. Okay, a man has a large capacity. You know, what is this? The fate of the world, something, something. So I got curious about what that quote is. Because after all, when you have these two mega giants and mega geniuses in a room together, and besides them and a few photographers, all that you can see is a quote, you kind of want to know, what is that all about? And so what I found is that it's actually taken from this piece of writing, Thoughts on Man's Purpose in Life by Admiral Rickover. And it was a speech delivered in 1977 at a luncheon meeting of the San Diego Rotary Club. Now, so you know, because you might not know otherwise, Rickover, as you see here to the right of the screen, let me see if I can just move that over for you, was an admiral in the United States Navy. He directed the original development of naval nuclear propulsion and controlled its operation for three decades as a director of the U.S. Naval Reactors Office. So that's a word about who he was. And what I thought that we could do today together is look at his speech, his thoughts on man's purpose in life, because again, that's where this quotation is taken from. Okay, so what are NVIDIA, OpenAI, Jensen, Musk, you know, what are they deriving for themselves as a matter of inspiration from this speech? Well, let's take a look. It's Thoughts on Man's Purpose in Life. So I haven't read it yet, and I'm going to read it now with you, and let's see how that goes. Voltaire once said, "Not to be occupied and not to exist are one and the same thing for a man." With those few words, he captured the essence of a purpose in life: to work, to create, to excel, and to be concerned about the world and its affairs. The question of what we can do to give common purpose or meaning to our lives has been debated for thousands of years by philosophers and common men. Yet today we seem, if anything, further from the answer than before. Despite our great material wealth and high standard of living, people are groping for something that money cannot buy. As Walter Lippmann said, "Our life, though it is full of things, is empty of the kind of purpose and effort that gives to life its flavor and meaning." I do not claim to have a magic answer, but I believe there are some basic principles of existence propounded by thinkers through the ages which can guide us toward the goal of finding a purpose in life. Among these principles of existence, responsibility is the one which forces man to become involved. Acceptance of responsibility means that the individual takes upon himself an obligation. Responsibility is broad and continuous. None of us are ever free of it, even if our work is unsuccessful. Responsibility implies a commitment to self, which many are not willing to make. They are strongly attracted to accepting a course of action or direction for their lives imposed by an external source. Such a relationship absolves the individual from the personal decision-making process. He wraps himself in the security blanket of inevitability or dogma and need not invest the enormous amounts of time, effort, and above all, the thought required to make creative decisions and meaningfully participate in the governance of his life. And if we pause here for a minute, I'm sure you know such people from your online circles and maybe from your real life circles. And maybe you are such a person yourself at times who, instead of getting involved with the direction of your life, absolves yourself from the decision-making process through the security blanket of inevitability. You know, things are going this way. There's nothing we can do about it. It's going to happen anyways. Or dogma. And therefore, we don't invest the enormous amounts of time, effort, and thought required to make collective decisions and meaningfully participate in the governance of our own lives. Responsibility also implies a commitment to others, or as Confucius taught, each of us is meant to rescue the world. It is the business of little minds to shrink from this task or to go about it without enthusiasm. Neither art nor science nor any of the great works of humanity would ever come into being without enthusiasm. Okay, so you can't be tepid and just have a barely warm heart. You have to be enthusiastic, and that's somehow at the basis of art, science, and the great works of humanity. Without that passion, probably neither great good for the world nor great evil for the world could come into being, since after all, you need to have some passion behind you in either case. The sense of responsibility for doing a job right, he continues, seems to be declining. Remember, this is 1977. In fact, the phrase, "I am not responsible," has become a standard response in our society to complaints on a job poorly done, right? It's always somebody else's fault, something else, some who knows what, systemic or whatever. This response is a semantic error. Generally, what a person means is, I cannot be held legally liable. Yet, from a moral or ethical point of view, the person who disclaims responsibility is correct. By taking this way out, he is truly not responsible. He's irresponsible. The unwillingness to act and to accept responsibility is a symptom of America's growing self-satisfaction with the status quo. The result is a paralysis of the spirit, entirely uncharacteristic of Americans during the previous stages of our history. Even complaints about high taxes and high prices are illusory. Behind them is hidden the reality that the majority, in terms of sheer creature comfort, never had it so good. Those who are still on the outside looking in are not strong or numerous enough to make a political difference. Okay, so let me just remind you where we're at here. We're reading Thoughts on Man's Purpose in Life by Admiral Rickover. And the reason we're doing that is because it's a quote from his remarks that you can see in these photographs here that Elon Musk shared of the time when Jensen, the CEO of NVIDIA, delivered the first AI system to OpenAI back when Musk was still involved with them. So we wanted to know a little bit more about the source of this quotation. It happens to be this speech by Admiral Rickover called Thoughts on Man's Purpose in Life. And we've just been discussing the fact that one of the principles of existence is responsibility. And as you see, he said something about the unwillingness to accept responsibility is a symptom of America's growing self-satisfaction with the status quo. And the result is a paralysis of the spirit, uncharacteristic of America during the previous stages of our history. Now we turn to the next principle, I suppose. Let's see what he says next. The task of finding a purpose in life also calls for perseverance. I have seen many young men, he says, who rush out into the world with their messages, and when they find out how deaf the world is, they withdraw to wait and save their strength. They believe that after a while, they will be able to get up on some little peak from which they can make themselves heard. Each thinks that in a few years, he will have gained a standing, and then he can use his power for good. Finally, the time comes, and with it a strange discovery. He has lost his horizon of thought. Without perseverance, ambition and a sense of responsibility have evaporated. Okay, so you have to be able to accept responsibility, but you also have to persevere. Don't give up at the first try and the first failure, and definitely don't just retire, because by the time that you've gained your standing and find some little peak, you may have lost your horizon of thought. Another important principle of existence, which gives purpose and meaning to life, is excellence. Because the conviction to strive for excellence is an intensely personal one, the attainment of excellence is personally satisfying. Happiness comes from the full use of one's power to achieve excellence. Life is potentially an empty hole, and there are few more satisfying ways of filling it than achieving and exercising excellence. Gotta love that. Nice statement here made in the classical spirit. Although there it was, you know, they use the language of virtue, which are, after all, the excellences of man's soul, moral and intellectual. So continuing on here, this principle of excellence is one which Americans seem to be losing in 1977, and at a time when the nation stands in need of it. A lack of excellence implies mediocrity. And in a society that is willing to accept a standard of mediocrity, the opportunities for personal failure are boundless. Mediocrity can destroy us as surely as perils far more famous. It is important that we distinguish between what it means to fail at a task and what it means to be mediocre. There's all the difference in the world between the life lived with dignity and style, which ends in failure, and one which achieves power and glory, yet is dull, unoriginal, unreflective, and mediocre. In a real sense, what matters is not so much whether we make a lot of money or hold a prestigious job. What matters is that we seek out others with knowledge and enthusiasm, that we become people who can enjoy our own company. In the end, avoiding mediocrity gives us the chance to discover that success comes in making ourselves into educated individuals, able to recognize that there's a difference between living with excellence and living with mediocrity. Sherlock Holmes once told Dr. Watson, "Watson, mediocrity knows nothing higher than itself. It takes talent to recognize genius." To which he could have added, "It takes talent to know that what counts is condemning mediocrity not in others, but in ourselves." We should honor excellence, but not necessarily with material rewards alone. The Japanese have a custom which I believe it would be well for us to emulate. Instead of honoring their artists with peerages or knighthoods, they give them the respectful title, National Human Treasure. That's nice. So again, for those of you who are just checking in, we're reading this speech delivered in 1977 by Admiral Rickover called Thoughts on Man's Purpose in Life. And again, we're not just doing that for no particular reason, but rather because this meeting of Elon Musk and the CEO of NVIDIA back in the day was posted by Musk about a week ago, and you see there's this quote in the background. And I wanted to know, you've got two of the smartest men in the world, two of the most influential tech giants in the world, and they have a motivational quote, and it's something that I hadn't seen before. So I dug around and found this source, and now we're going through it to see what inspires NVIDIA, Jensen, and Musk. And you shouldn't be surprised, I guess, as you go through this. Excellence, perseverance. Okay, I've seen clips of Jensen in the last little while from 10 years ago talking about how important it is to persevere in the face of failure, which after all, a company like NVIDIA surely must have experienced many times on the way to its current status. Okay, responsibility. So you can see sort of, this is a decently accurate reflection, apparently, of at least the public postures of the CEO of NVIDIA and Musk, although I know he has his critics. But let's continue. Creativity is another of the basic principles of existence, which I believe help to give purpose in life. The deepest joy in life is to be creative, to find an undeveloped situation, to see the possibilities, to decide upon a course of action, and then to devote the whole of one's resources to carry it out, even if it means battling against the stream of contemporary opinion. That is a satisfaction in comparison with which superficial pleasures are trivial. To create, you must care. You must have the courage to speak out. The world's advances always have depended on the courage of its leaders. A certain measure of courage in the private citizen also is necessary to the good conduct of the state. Otherwise, men who have the power through riches, intrigue, or office will administer the state at will, and ultimately to their private advantage. For the citizen, this courage means a frank exposition of a problem and a decrying of the excesses of power, Okay, so you need courage both as a citizen and as a private man. It takes courage to do this because in our polite society, frank speech is discouraged. But when this attitude relates to questions involving the welfare or survival of the nation, it is singularly unfitting to remain evasive. Okay, so you have to have the courage to speak up on questions that involve the welfare or survival of the nation. It is not only possible, but in fact, the duty of everyone to state precisely what his knowledge and conscience compel him to say. Many of today's problems can be brought forward only by complete candor and frankness, deep respect for the facts, however unpleasant and uncomfortable, great efforts to know them where they're not readily available, and drawing conclusions guided only by rigorous knowledge. Wow, so this is 1977, okay? Look at this and ask yourselves today, where are we? 2000, whatever, 24, okay? When you have the Google Gemini fiasco, when you have DEI on campus fiasco, and you have all of the censorship and all of the cancellation and everything else that you've known about over the last several years, let's just reread this and ask yourself to measure by this standard how things have gone from 1977 to 2024. So he says again, it is not only possible, but in fact, the duty of everyone to state precisely what his knowledge and conscience compel him to say. Many of today's problems can be brought forward only by complete candor and frankness, deep respect for the facts, however unpleasant and uncomfortable, okay? However unpleasant and uncomfortable, great efforts to know them where they are not readily available, and drawing conclusions guided only by rigorous logic. To have courage means to pursue your goals or to satisfy your responsibilities, even though others stand in the way and success seems like a dream. It takes courage to stand and fight for what you believe is right, and the fight never ends. You have to start it over and over again each morning as the sun rises. Sir Thomas More wrote, "If evil persons cannot be quite rooted out, and if you cannot correct habitual attitudes as you wish, you must not, therefore, abandon the Commonwealth. You must strive to guide policy indirectly so that you make the best of things, and what you cannot turn to good, you can at least make less bad." Okay, I want to pause and just say something here quickly. I told you how I found this, right? So you had Elon Musk, Jensen, NVIDIA, OpenAI, and this quote in the background. Pursuing this quote led me to this piece, Thoughts on Man's Purpose, which I hadn't pre-read. Okay, I thought I'd just go over it with you together on this live stream. But so far, it's showing me something that I've been talking about and thinking about lately, which is this. It's a piece of writing, a speech, in fact, that you see is rousing for an entrepreneur, right? You're going to fail, persevere. Your creativity is an important contribution to the general well-being of the Commonwealth. Okay, so obviously a inventor, investor to some extent, a business owner, somebody who's starting a business, an entrepreneur is somebody for whom creative work has special dignity. And, you know, there are some theoretical types whose vision of theory and philosophy is that it's degraded when it moves into the world of practical application, invention, and so on. You know, they really want to elevate you to the kind of contemplative, non-practical principles that transcend work as such. You know, and there's a long history of thinking about what it means to define man's essence as finding its dignity primarily in thought that produces no results. Let's say just as pure contemplation, kind of a prayerful thought, and action, you know, invention, ingenuity. Like, who's done greater good for the world? The inventor of the railroads and somebody who does charitable investment and so on, or somebody who's, you know, just doing speculative theology that doesn't culminate in anything? Well, each of those has a place in the economy of man's life. Each of them represents a specific certain kind of dignity. But what I want to say is this, again, it's not surprising to find entrepreneurs and business people like Musk and Jensen attracted to a speech or an idea or opinion that valorizes creative work, a responsibility, genius, effort, and all of that. But what's fascinating about this speech and what I love in their being attracted to it. What I love about the fact that they have it up on the wall, and you know, we have to assume, I guess, that at least one of them has read it, hopefully, is that it represents even more broadly the background principles of political philosophy. He's not just saying, go be an entrepreneur, create something, generate profit for yourself and others, and you're in effect doing a good thing in the world. This speaker, let me show you again, right? He's talking about what's important for the Commonwealth beyond just the creative work of the capitalist or industrialist, right? He says, you have a duty as a citizen to state what your knowledge and conscience compel you to say. And you have to have courage, not only as a private individual, but as a citizen. And that's necessary, not just for enriching your shareholders, but for the good conduct of the state. In other words, this isn't just a piece of inspirational speech for business people and entrepreneurs. It's also basic education in civics and the principles of political well-being. So let's go back down here and continue. Oh yeah, and what I was saying is somehow an idea that I've been pursuing more and more lately is that there's this nice overlap between the writings that are inspiring or that can be used to shed a light on the activities of entrepreneurs, investors, financiers, startup world people, tech people, okay, because a lot of them have been coming to my school lately, which is why I've been trying to think this through at a deeper level. On one hand, there is all of that, the things that inspire these creators, and there's a close connection between those topics and the basic topics of political philosophy, okay? And I think you see that in this speech delivered in 1977 too. These principles of existence, to continue now, responsibility, perseverance, excellence, creativity, courage, must be wedded with intellectual growth and development if we are to find meaning and purpose in our lives. It is a device of the devil to let sloth into the world. By the age of 20, some of us already have adopted a granite-like attitude, which we maintain throughout life. Intellectually, we must never stop growing. Our conscience should never release us from concern for the problems of the day. Our minds must be forever skeptical, yet questioning. We must strive to be singularly free from that failing so common to man, deplored by Pascal and the Pensée, of filling our leisure with meaningless distractions so as to preclude the necessity of thought. To be an intellectual in the fullest sense, one's mind must be in constant movement. Okay, you see, another example here is not just valorizing creative, productive labor, but he's reminding us, don't fill your leisure with meaningless distractions so as to preclude the necessity of thought. Our conscience should never release us from the basic issues that concern us. We must never stop growing, and it's a device of the devil to let sloth into the world. Very nice then transition to Aristotle, who in the Middle Ages was known simply as the philosopher. Aristotle believed that happiness was to be found in the use of the intellect. Okay, you can find this in many places, but especially Ethics, Book 6, Nicomachean Ethics, Book 6. Okay, Aristotle believed that happiness was to be found in the use of the intellect. In other words, ignorance is not bliss, it is oblivion. The inspired prayer does not ask for health, wealth, prosperity, or anything material, but says, God, illumine my intellect. Man cannot find purpose in his life without expanding and using his intellectual qualities and capacities. Liberal learning is a primary source of these qualities. Now, I assume you know, but let me just tell you here, he doesn't mean liberal learning like go read Ibram Kendi and watch MSNBC. Liberal in the old-fashioned and comprehensive sense of the liberal arts, the liberal education, and education in the things that make your mind free from the ordinary fetters. By liberal learning, okay, fine, he specifies himself here. By liberal learning, I refer to discerning taste, wise judgment, informed and critical perspectives that transcend specialized interest and partisan passions, the capacity to understand complexity, and to grow in response to it. Okay, there you go, beautiful. By the way, you see, there's so many passages of this that you can pull out and put on the wall if you need good inspiration about creative work, responsibility, and intelligence. So I'm enjoying this. I hope you are too. We're going to continue it in a minute. But I wanted to say here, just because of what he mentioned about liberal learning, there's a nice book that somebody recommended to me, somebody, in fact, himself in the world of venture capital. The book is called Investing, the Last Liberal Art, written by Richard Hagstrom. And it's a nice book because it shows you that somehow it's the investor today who is closest in his aspiration to the breadth of liberal learning classically understood, because he says in order to invest well, it's very helpful to know history, literature, economics, several different arts and sciences, and for me of particular interest, philosophy. So I always use that book as an example, one of several, but one nevertheless, an example of an investor. I think he manages a large fund himself, Richard Hagstrom, an investor who gives credit to philosophy for helping you to become a better investor. So that's Investing, the Last Liberal Art by Richard Hagstrom. And you see here why liberal, again, liberal in this sense, liberal learning refers to discerning taste, wise judgment, informed and critical perspectives that transcend specialized interests and partisan passions, the capacity to understand complexity and to grow in response to it. Things that are all very valuable in many parts of life, but surely for the investor too. Okay, continuing now. A cause of many of our mistakes and problems is ignorance, an overwhelming national ignorance of the facts about the rest of the world. Remember, this is 1977. I wonder what you think. Have things gotten better or worse since then? A nation or an individual cannot function unless the truth is available and understood. No amount of good on the part of the leaders or the media will offset ignorance and apathy in the common citizen. Since the United States is a democracy, the broad answer is that all of us must become better informed. Reading is one method of accomplishing this purpose. By spending a few dollars for a book, the thoughts and life's work of a great man are available to us. The proof of living, as Norman Cousins has said, is in memory, and all of us, through reading, can live five or six lifetimes in one. Through reading, the sluices of the mind open up, making accessible a range of experiences otherwise beyond our personal reach. In reading books, we grow both emotionally and intellectually. As a reader, man is unique among living things. The ability to read, and more broadly, the ability to express complex ideas through language, distinguishes him from all other life forms. Without language, complex thought is inconceivable, and the mind is undeveloped. The ability to speak and write, the inability to speak and write imprisons thought. In the same vein, sloppy, imprecise thinking begets sloppy, imprecise language. Language and thought are interconnected, and the written word is the vehicle which best advances both. Therefore, he continues, I count reading and its associated skill, writing, among the most significant of all human efforts. Good writing, after all, is simply the result of enormous reading, detailed research, and careful thought. It means studying to gain a good vocabulary and practicing to learn how to use it. It seems to me that these kindred skills should be developed and nourished from the very first if man is to grow intellectually, and unless he can express his thoughts well, he can exert little influence on his fellow men. Okay, pausing before he turns to the final principle of existence essential to man's purpose in life. Not to be repetitive, but I know some of you are just tuning in and I want you to know what it is that we're doing. So NVIDIA has been in the news recently, as perhaps you know, because of the boom in demand for their systems caused by the boom in artificial intelligence successes and ventures and developments and all of that. So NVIDIA has been off the charts. Their stock, you know, is going up and up and up in the last little while here, and they just had their earnings release. So they've been in the news, and Elon Musk, you don't need me to tell you, his significance in all the different fields in which he's working. And he posted about a week ago this picture of Jensen, the CEO of NVIDIA, delivering the first AI system to OpenAI back when Musk was involved with OpenAI. You know, he has, I guess, an ongoing feud with them because they used to be open and now they're closed. They used to be not for profit, now they're for profit, and all the rest of it. But nevertheless, he posted this photo, and I was very curious about this quote in the background, because when you have a room with this much IQ in it, and there's one motivational quote on the wall, you better want to know what that is from, what it's saying, and why it's there for them. And so, in fact, it comes from this piece of, well, for me, it's a piece of writing, but originally it was a speech delivered by Admiral Rickover in 1977, Thoughts on Man's Purpose in Life, which is what we're going through. And Admiral Rickover, you may never have heard his name, I certainly hadn't. He was an admiral in the United States Navy. He directed the original development of naval nuclear propulsion and controlled its operations for 3 decades as director of the U.S. Naval Reactors Office. Okay, so that gives you background for where we are and what we're doing. And now that he's discussed certain of these principles of existence essential to man's purpose in life, we turn to the final one. I now will discuss, he says, on one final principle of existence essential to man's purpose in life, the development of standards of ethical and moral conduct. God, it is generally conceded, has made a remarkable job of the physical universe, but has strangely not done quite so well with the spiritual element. There's abundant evidence around us to conclude that morals and ethics are becoming less prevalent in people's lives. The standards of conduct which lay deeply buried in accepted thought for centuries no longer are absolute. Many people seem unable to differentiate between physical relief and moral satisfaction. They confuse material success in life with virtue. The decline in morals parallels the decline of traditional religion in all areas of our society. In our desire to separate church and state, we've gone to the opposite extreme and have exorcised religious training from our public schools and colleges, thus depriving our youth of the lasting standard of the morals and ethics enunciated by the Ten Commandments and the Sermon on the Mount. Morals are the quarrel we have with behavior. Any system of education which does not inculcate moral values simply furnishes the intellectual equipment whereby men and women can better satisfy their pride, greed, and lust. We are now living on the accumulated moral capital of traditional religion, the Admiral continues. It is running out and we have no other consensus of values to take its place. This is partly because man can now obtain on earth what previously was promised him when he reached heaven. In our system of society, no authority exists to tell us what is good and desirable. You know, this has been called the crisis of common rationality and so on. Very much a topic for political theorists and political philosophers. We are each free to seek what we think is good in our own way. The danger is that where men compromise truth and let decency slip, they eventually end up with neither. A free society can survive only through men and women of integrity. Fortunately, there still exist human beings who remain concerned about moral and ethical values and justice towards others. These are individuals who provide hope of the ultimate realism that is marked by society's capacity to survive rather than be eventually destroyed. Ethics and morals are basically individual values, he says. A society that does not possess an ethical dimension will find it almost impossible to draft a law to give it that dimension. Law merely deters some men from offending and punishes others from offending. It does not make men good. Okay, another principle in political philosophy, right? The law isn't just the sole force of guiding men's behavior. It rests on habituation, manners, mores, customs, all of which ultimately, in the best case scenario, derive their legitimacy, their force, and their plausibility and their character from the idea of a god or gods who reveal to man what he must know for the ordering of his soul, of his life, and of his political community. So for example, a book that I've read and taught and I'm teaching now in Millerman School, The Laws of Plato. Okay, and this is a tradition that gets carried forward in the history of Platonic political philosophy and the works of Rousseau and others, picked up on by contemporary Platonic political philosophers like Leo Strauss. Okay, is that law rests on something other than itself. As he puts it here, law merely deters men from offending and punishes others from offending. It does not make them good. They need an ethic. Law rests on a quote-unquote ethical dimension, traditionally taught to be habituated through religious mores. Okay, but back to the essay. It's important also to recognize that morals and ethics are not relative. They do not depend on the situation. This may be the hardest principle to follow in working to achieve goals. Excuse me. The ends, no matter how worthy they appear, cannot justify any means. Brandeis, who was deeply convinced of the importance of standards, said, "One can never be sure of ends, political, social, economic. There must always be doubt and difference of opinion." But Brandeis had no doubt about means. Fundamentals do not change. Centuries of thought have established standards. Lying and sneaking are always bad, no matter what the ends. This is a very enabling statement, says the admiral. Life is not meaningless for the man who considers certain actions wrong simply because they are wrong, whether or not they violate the law. This kind of moral code gives a person a focus, a basis on which to conduct himself. You know, in the Christian tradition, this is natural law. In the pre-Christian or Greek tradition, you could say it's natural right. It's the idea of a justice that transcends the law, or a justice against which the law can be measured as to its own justness. To continue though, certainly there's a temptation to let go of morals in order to do the expedient thing, but there's also a tremendous power in standing by what is right. Principle and accomplishment need not be incompatible. A common thread moves through all the principles I've discussed, and we'll review them when we're through this speech. It is the desire to improve oneself and one's surroundings by actively participating in life. Too many succumb to the emotional preference of the comfortable solution instead of the difficult one. It is easy to do nothing, and to do nothing is also an act of indifference or cowardice. A person must prepare himself intellectually and professionally, and then use his powers to their fullest extent. This view is well expressed in two extracts from I Ching, the Confucian Book of Changes, quoting now from there. "The superior man learns and accumulates the results of his learning, puts questions and discriminates among those results, dwells magnanimously and unambitiously in what he has attained to, and carries it into practice with benevolence. The superior man nerves himself to ceaseless activity." End quote. And by the way, once again, you see how this could instantly appeal to an entrepreneur / founder / businessman, right? A man of action. Rightfully so. It is important to be both a thinker and a doer, and to have a sense of responsibility. A theoretician who has no responsibility is withdrawn from the real world. His recommendations are made in a vacuum. Because he is not required to carry them out, they may be irresponsible and do harm. Similarly, those in charge, the doers, are often devoid of any real thought. Okay, in one of the last live streams I did, we saw how the CEO of Palantir, Alex Karp, was basically accusing some of his peers in Silicon Valley of being in this situation, being devoid of real thought. And therefore, we read his remarks as a call to Silicon Valley to turn towards political philosophy. And here we see a similar sentiment, okay? You can't be a doer and not a thinker. You can't be a thinker and not a doer. Combine them. Get that beautiful middle ground and combination. To find a purpose in life, one must be willing to act, to put excellence in one's work, and have concern for what is right ahead of personal safety. Life must be felt, not observed, but to do so means to apply oneself to the task daily. Ralph Waldo Emerson said, "God offers to every mind its choice between truth and repose. Take what you please, you can never have both." No professional man has the right to prefer his own personal peace to the happiness of mankind. His place and his duty are in the front line of struggling men, not in the unperturbed ranks of those who keep themselves aloof from life. If a profession is to have its proper place in the further development of society, it must be increasingly dissatisfied with things as they are. If there is to be any exaltation in one's work, one must learn to reach out, not to struggle for that which is just beyond, but to grasp at results which seem almost infinite. Now, maybe that's even the quote that's on the wall there, because if Elon Musk is not doing that, then what is he doing, right? Grasping at results which seem almost infinite, especially in his desire to make humanity a multi-planetary species. As Robert Browning wrote, "Ah, but a man's reach should exceed his grasp, or what's a heaven for?" Man's work begins with his job, his profession. Having a vocation is something of a miracle, like falling in love. "I can understand," continues the admiral, "why Luther said that a man is justified by his vocation, for it is a proof of God's favor. But having a vocation means much more than punching a time clock. It means guarding against banality, ineptitude, incompetence, and mediocrity. A man should strive to become a locus of excellence." Most of the work in the world today is done by those who work too hard. They comprise a nucleus of martyrs. The greater part of the remaining workers' energy goes into complaining. Employees today seldom become emotional about their organizations or its output. They're only interested in making money or getting ahead. And many organizations are killing their employees with kindness, undercutting their sense of responsibility with an ever-increasing permissiveness. This is fatal error, for where responsibility ends, performance also ends. Okay, I want to remind you again, this is 1977. Thoughts on man's purpose in life. And ask yourselves and comment, you know, is he not spot on? And have we not fallen even further still? "We measure ourselves by many standards," said William James. "Our strength and our intelligence, our wealth and even our good luck, are things which warm our hearts and make us feel ourselves a match for life. But deeper than all such things, and able to suffice unto itself without them, is the sense of the amount of effort which we can put forth." Ah, and here is the quote, if you remember. I'll show you in a minute. You'll see it on the wall there. "Man has a large capacity for effort, but it is so much greater than we think it is that few ever reach this capacity." Okay, now I remind you, not to be a broken record, here's Elon Musk, here's Jensen. Musk, you know, this is from when he was at OpenAI. Jensen, NVIDIA. Okay, pictures from when Jensen delivered the first NVIDIA AI system to OpenAI. And in the background is this quote. And it was in pursuing the source of this quote that I found these remarks, thoughts on man's purpose in life. And you see, look, man has a large capacity, right? Man has a large capacity. You see that top line over there? Now we go over here. "Man has a large capacity for effort, but it is so much greater than we think it is that few ever reach this capacity. We should value the faculty of knowing what we ought to do and having the will to do it. But understanding is easy. It is the doing that is difficult. The critical issue is not what we know, but what we do with what we know. The great end of life is not knowledge, but action. Theodore Roosevelt expressed this concept well in his Man in the Arena statement." Some of you surely are familiar with this. "It is not the critic who counts, not the one who points out how the strong man stumbled or how the doer of deeds might have done them better. The credit belongs to the man who is actually in the arena, whose face is marred with sweat and dust and blood, who strives valiantly, who errs and comes short again and again, who knows the great enthusiasms, the great devotions, and spends himself in a worthy cause, who, if he wins, knows the triumph of high achievement, and who, if he fails, at least fails while daring greatly, so that his place shall never be with those cold and timid souls who know neither victory nor defeat. The man in the arena has found a purpose in life. He daily experiences Emerson's declaration that nothing is achieved without enthusiasm. Nothing is achieved without enthusiasm. He knows that men seldom come within shouting distance of their hopes for themselves. Yet he does not quite in resignation as, excuse me, that's a typo. He does not quit in resignation, as have those who have taken trouble with nothing except to be born. In his work, he is buffeted from two sides, challenged by his own ideas, which revolt at the compromises of reality, and assaulted by reality, which fights those ideas. He spends himself in that struggle, and he wins by a constant renewal of effort, in which he refuses to sink either into placid acceptance of the situation or into self-satisfaction. Okay, we're getting close to the end of this speech. We have two paragraphs left to go. I'd love to know what you think about what he has said in it. And I hope that we're not just learning here something about the underlying inspirational, let's say, worldview or philosophy or just analysis of man's place in the world that lies behind the great achievements of NVIDIA and Musk, but that you yourself also resonate with what he's saying here and feel compelled to take intelligent action in your life, in your business, and to test for yourself this observation that man has a large capacity for effort, but it is so much greater than we think it is. And not to be those few that reach this capacity. I mean, excuse me, not to be the many who don't reach the capacity, but to be among the few who push themselves to do just that. Okay, so we're just here now, penultimate paragraph. I believe it is the duty of each of us to act as if the fate of the world depended on him. Admittedly, one man by himself cannot do the job. However, one man can make a difference. Each of us is obligated to bring his individual and independent capacities to bear upon a wide range of human concerns. It is with this conviction that we squarely confront our duty to prosperity. We must live for the future of the human race and not of our own comfort or success. For anyone seeking meaning for his life, a figure from Greek mythology comes to mind. It is that of Atlas, bearing with endless perseverance the weight of the heavens on his back. Atlas resolutely bearing his burden and accepting his responsibility, that gives us the example we seek. To seek out and accept responsibility, to persevere, to be committed to excellence, to be creative and courageous, to be unrelenting in the pursuit of intellectual development, to maintain high standards of ethics and morality, and to bring these basic principles of existence to bear through active participation in life. These are some of my ideas on the goals which must be met to achieve meaning and purpose in life. So that was a speech given in 1977 by Admiral Rickover, the father of the nuclear navy, one of the most successful and controversial public managers of the 20th century. Okay, I'm going to read this too, because I have to say, I liked that speech and I want to know more about the person who made it. His accomplishments are the stuff of legend. For example, in 3 short years, Rickover's team designed and built the first nuclear submarine, the Nautilus, an amazing feat of engineering, given that it involved the development of the first use of a controlled nuclear reactor. The Nautilus not only transformed submarine warfare, but also laid the groundwork for a whole fleet of nuclear aircraft carriers and cruisers, which was also built by Rickover and his team. Okay, the text below. No, we don't have a text below, right? We have a text above. And maybe this is referring to another speech, because if I'm not mistaken, this one was given in 1977. So that was Thoughts on Man's Purpose in Life. I think it's worth rereading, okay, and paying some attention to. And again, when you study it like I do, political philosophy, Plato, Aristotle, and everybody else, you become familiar with some of these ideas, okay? Striving for excellence, moral and intellectual perfection, that's there. In some philosophers as well, you have the idea of striving for the perfection of your faculty of imagination, something that I like because it brings us into the realm of creativity, receptivity, prophecy. I say that because Maimonides, a medieval Jewish thinker, once defined the prophet as somebody who has a perfected intellect and a perfected imagination, and who can convey what he receives basically from God into his intellect by means of image through his perfected faculty of imagination to a broader public, sometimes as a prophet. Yeah, that's the definition of a prophet. But I like the idea of an entrepreneur, or even of some of these AI systems, if properly constructed, intelligently trained, as being, you know, an image. Anyway, perfect intellect, perfect imagination, conveying something to a broader audience. Not only do lawgivers do that, not only do prophets do that in the medieval tradition, but I think today in our time, the entrepreneur, the tech figure is kind of like that to some extent. I'm not saying Elon Musk is a prophet, okay? I'm saying there's a structural similarity. And that's why, to me, it was extremely interesting to see that when Elon Musk and Jensen met here to have the first AI system delivered to OpenAI, they had this quote in the background that it's from this piece of writing, Thoughts on Man's Purpose in Life, and that this very excellent speech introduces us to some fundamental principles of existence, among which we have responsibility, perseverance, excellence. You never want to have excellence off a list of principles of life, okay? But it's beautifully combined here with these others: responsibility, perseverance, avoiding mediocrity. Very important, okay? Striving for and honoring excellence, but not with material rewards alone. Creativity. This is something where, okay, let me continue, and then I'll give you my little connection here. Creativity, courage, okay? Courage as a private individual and courage as a citizen. Responsibility, perseverance, excellence, creativity, courage, wedded with intellectual growth and development. According to him, that's what you need to find meaning and purpose in your life. And you know what? Consider it. You're going to have a meaningful and a purposeful life with no courage, with no creativity, with no striving for excellence, no persevering, no responsibility. It's always somebody else's fault. You always give up when you fail. You're striving for mediocrity. You're completely unoriginal, not putting your God-given creative tasks to work in any capacity. And you're a spineless little coward. It's self-evident when you state it this way. But we don't live like it's self-evident. It's a device of the devil to let sloth into the world. Okay, and a lot of people succumb to the temptations of the devil. And I include myself in that often enough, okay? But we fight the dying of the light. We fight the devil's devices and try to orient ourselves towards the principles of existence that give us meaning and purpose in our lives and happiness in our lives. Okay, Aristotle believed that happiness was to be found in the use of the intellect. See, this person is not just sitting in academia doing nothing. This person is the father of the Navy. Okay, he himself is a man of action, responsibility, perseverance, excellence, creativity, and courage. And he reminds us that happiness is to be found in the use of the intellect. And when he does so, he remembers the great philosopher Aristotle. Okay, this also shows us just how relevant it is for us always to be acquainted with the basic teachings of the old philosophers. Okay, and every time and place, under all circumstances, it can only help you to know something about what Aristotle and Plato taught as you consider a meaningful and a purposeful and a happy life. Look at this beauty. The inspired prayer does not ask for health, wealth, prosperity, or anything material, but says, God, illumine my intellect. That is almost a direct quote from this great book, Plato's Laws. I'm not telling you he took it from there. I'm telling you it's an idea that's been expressed there and in many places over the history of human reflection on law, on intelligence, on morality, on order. God illumine my intellect is what we should pray for according to this great admiral. Okay, so a cause of many of our mistakes and problems is ignorance. One of the best things you can do is to read. Because when you read, you become a better writer. And reading and writing is both necessary to express your thoughts. If you can't express your thoughts well, you can't influence your fellow men. Very nice. And the final principle of existence, the development of standards of ethical and moral conduct, which he directly relates to traditional religion. And the decline in morals in our time parallels the decline of traditional religion. Okay, so as I said, I didn't read this before coming on the live stream with you today. I thought we'd just go over it together. I'm glad that we did. I'd love to know what you think and anything you want to add to the conversation. Okay, very nice piece of writing here. Authors that I loved as a young man, William James. Okay, are mentioned Greek mythology, Atlas, Aristotle, Voltaire. Beautiful speech. Okay, 1977, Thoughts on Man's Purpose in Life. So I hope you enjoyed that. Here's the CEO of NVIDIA, absolutely crushing it. I'm interested in seeing more interviews of his because he seems to embody some of these principles himself, especially about perseverance. I think in business, you must fail so many times. I can tell you that ever since leaving academia and opening my own online school, millermanschool.com, I've become increasingly interested in how entrepreneurs regulate their emotions and their expectations in the face of both success and failure, because it's not easy. It's not so straightforward. Okay, there's the NVIDIA stock again. They were in the news recently. That's the father of the Navy right there, Admiral Rickover. So I don't have too much to add besides that. I'd love to know what you think. I request, if you're interested in this kind of video, you know, subscribe, comment, make it easier for people to find the channel. You can see my courses on Aristotle, Plato, and other thinkers at millermanschool.com. If you're new to all of this and you want a sophisticated, I mean, not totally oversimplified, not explain it to me like I'm five, but, you know, a pretty intermediate level introduction to philosophy, you can go to philosophyintro.com, where I have an email introduction to philosophy that walks you through some Heidegger and some Plato, things like that. And that's it, I guess. Okay, I guess normally I throw comments on screen, so maybe let's do that for a little bit before signing off. Hero worship of capitalist plutocrats. No, see, this is what I thought, actually, is that I'm familiar with the view among certain kinds of people that to valorize or to look up to idolize is too strong, you know, but to admire people like Musk or people like Jensen or successful entrepreneurs or business owners, people like Thiel, okay, people like that, it can seem like, quote, hero worship of capitalist plutocrats, unquote. And there are many ways in which you can put that kind of hero worship down. You could do it as a socialist, you could do it as a leftist, you could do it as an anti-capitalist of other kinds, you could do it as somebody who hates technology, thinks that soon we're all going to be brain chipped and so on and so on. But, you know, it's not that simple, because again, you read something like Thoughts on Man's Purpose in Life, and this isn't just a valorization. This isn't just a hero worship of capitalist plutocrats. That's not what it is. Look, let's go down to the bottom. Okay, let's go down to the bottom. To seek out and accept responsibility, to persevere, to be committed to excellence, to be creative and courageous, to be unrelenting in the pursuit of intellectual development, to maintain high standards of ethics and morality, and to bring these basic principles of existence to bear through active participation in life. These are some of my ideas on goals which must be met to achieve meaning and purpose in life. We're really looking at the question, what is a good life? What is a happy life? What is a meaningful life? What is a purposeful life? And isn't it true that to some extent, it's not just your individual satisfaction that counts, it's your pursuit of something greater than yourself. We must live for the future of the human race, he says. So there's more to it than just quote-unquote hero worship. There's something for us to think about, Kevin, and it's not true that these plutocrats are not above average intelligence significantly and have no morals. It may be true of some of them, but I don't think it's true as a generalization. Pass over that. Roshad on his first live stream. Good to have you here. Hope you enjoyed it. What else? NVIDIA was awarded a contract for DARPA, etc. Okay, Kevin, we get your point. Frank, thank God Michael Millerman is back. Peter, appreciate that. I'm glad you like the channel. And it's pieces of writing like this, they inspire me to get over myself, because I'll tell you the truth. It's not the most comfortable thing in the world for me to come on a live stream with you and read. Okay, I have my critics. Oh, Michael Millerman does a live stream. All he does is read somebody else's essay. Huh? What's so original about that? It's like, okay, kind of. That's true. I mean, I read somebody. I didn't write that speech. Admiral Rickover wrote it. I just read it. I'm just sharing it with you. So there have been times where I thought, that's kind of pathetic maybe. I don't know. But it isn't. I've asked you. You enjoy it. I enjoy it. We learn something from it. Why wouldn't I do it? Or I think, oh, come on a live stream and who knows, maybe I'll make a fool of myself. I'll say the wrong thing. I'll have dirt on my glasses that I didn't notice, et cetera, et cetera. Okay. That's very easy to want to shrink away from any kind of public activity. On the other hand, there are incentives and motivations, not only of a monetary kind, right? I'm trying to find people to come study with me at my school. You know, it's very nice to have the YouTube channel grow and people that like to think about morality, ethics, law, political philosophy, the difference between the ancients and the moderns, classical learning and all of that. But yeah, like partially this speech is a pep talk for me too. You know, I think it should be a kind of pep talk for anybody who's involved in business and entrepreneurship or is thinking about it, or who just needs a model for helping them to understand why it's important to try to do something good in public, even if you fail, and how you don't just do that out of a unintelligent, ignorant, over-compassionate, bleeding heart sense of justice and morality, but as he put it, ethics and morals, yes, but also a commitment to understanding intelligently. So anyway, my point is, it's a pep talk for me too. Okay. Not only for you. And you know, it's great that you're here because that means you got something out of the Admiral's speech, which you might not have known about if not for this live stream. So that's good. Patrick writes, he was 16 in 1977. Everything seemed possible and exciting. That's good. And promoting reading is always a virtue. Yeah. I mean, I agree with you, right? Let's just look before we close. Let's look at that passage again, because it's very, very well stated case here for an all around balanced life, private, public, moral, intellectual. That's good. Where do we have here? Reading. Let's just read this once more, okay? There's no harm in going over it once more. This part. A cause of many of our mistakes and problems is ignorance, an overwhelming national ignorance of the facts about the rest of the world. A nation or an individual cannot function unless the truth is available and understood. No amount of good on the part of the leaders or the media will offset ignorance and apathy in the common citizen. Okay, since the United States is a democracy, the broad answer is all of us must become better informed. That's why Leo Strauss once said the original meaning of a democracy was a universal aristocracy. By spending a few dollars for a book, the thoughts and life's work of a great man are available to us. Okay, so reading and its associated skill, writing, he counts as among the most significant of all human efforts. And so on and so on. So, look, I hope that you enjoyed that. I'm Michael Millerman, millermanschool.com, philosophyintro.com. I'm on Twitter. I have a Substack. We've got this channel. Okay, get into this conversation with me. Philosophy, political philosophy, law, ethics, morality. Enjoy it. NVIDIA, OpenAI, Rickover, and Thoughts on Man's Purpose in Life. That was that. Take care. See you in the next video.